You can see what we'll be covering tonight, as time will allow, on the sheet that we gave you. Jacob's children by wives and concubines. Now, at the end of the last chapter, chapter 29, verse 31 to the end of the chapter, Jacob had four boys by Leah. That was one of his wives. This chapter, we're going to see him having the rest of his boys, except for one. One's not recorded in this chapter. By Leah's handmaid, and Rachel's handmaid, and by Rachel. So by the time we get through, between four women, we'll find 11 boys and one girl. It's going to be a busy 7 years. So that's what happens in our text tonight. Okay, and then the last boy was born later on his return to Canaan. And he was born to Rachel, and that's Benjamin. Okay, so we talked about the fact that when Jacob went to seek his a wife, he didn't have flocks and herds. He was not wealthy. He did not have a wife. He did not have children. But now, on his return, we're going to find, as you see at the top of your lesson, that he is wealthy. And not only in good, but also with a large family. So that's what happens here in chapter 30 and 31. And then you'll see at the end of the period of working for Laban, 20 years, that he leaves and returns to Canaan. That'll set the stage for the chapters that follow. All right, notice on the outline that we gave you, chapter 31 through 8, Rachel's maid, Bilhah, bears two sons, Dan and Naphtali. Now, we had suggested in your marking, if you mark, that you may want to, I think I did this on the previous lesson, may want to mark the names of the boys in some way, or circle them or highlight them, and underline which mother they go with. But anyway, so we have these two boys, Dan and Naphtali. You see that in verse 6 and verse 8 of chapter 30. And then you have Leah's maid, Zilpah, and she bears two sons, Gad and Asher. And then Leah, who already had four of the boys, has two more boys. And that's Issachar and Zebulun, plus a daughter named Dinah. And then finally, at the end of the chapter and at the end of the 7 years, you see Joseph being born. Okay, so that's what we're going to have. And then, real interesting in the last part of the chapter, how Jacob becomes wealthy through selective breeding of sheep and goats. And then in chapter 31, he flees from Laban to return to Canaan. Okay. Let's look at chapter 30 together, and let's start here in verse 1. You'll note down at the on your outline, Jacob's sons, and then I have family conflict, 29:30 through 30:20. Back in chapter 29, verse 30, what is the source of this conflict that we're going to read about?
Rachel had no children.
That's part of it. Rachel had no children. That's a good answer. Why does that cause conflict?
Jealousy.
What?
Jacob loved Leah, Rachel more than Leah.
Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah. And you were going to say something else? No?
Same thing.
Same thing. Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah. And because Leah could have children and Rachel didn't, so, what was Rachel's attitude?
Jealous.
So you see that in chapter 30, verse 1. When Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she became jealous of her sister. Now, it's not said that Leah was jealous, but there is conflict as you go through here. In fact, a little bit later in the text, you'll see in verse 14, in the days of wheat harvest, Reuben went and found mandrakes in the field. Reuben at this time was what, about 4 years old maybe? And we don't know exactly what mandrakes are. You can go study. You can find different ones say different things, and some are honest enough to say we don't know what they were. But it's some kind of fruit or flower that was associated in that culture with romantic love and childbearing. Over in the Song of Solomon, you'll find them being used in connection with the love between the young woman and the man that she's in love with. But nevertheless, you see Reuben going out and getting these mandrakes and brought them to his mother Leah. And then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said, is it a small matter for you to take my husband? And would you take my son's mandrakes also? So you can see there's I don't know if hostility is the word, but bad feelings toward Rachel. It goes both ways in this particular incident. There's a story over in 1 Samuel about another man who had conflict in his family. It's right at the beginning of 1 Samuel. Do you remember who we're talking about? Elkanah and Peninnah and Hannah. And so, why was Peninnah jealous of Hannah? Same thing. He loved one woman more than the other, right? And so Peninnah tried to make it hard on Hannah, actually. But both in this case and that case, what have the men got themselves involved in that opens the door for that?
Polygamy.
Polygamy was never God's plan. He tolerated it. And you're going to ask me why he tolerated it? And I've got my good answer. I don't know. But it was never God's plan. That much I know. But when we divert from God's plan, we're opening the door to trouble. And you see that in every case, like with Abraham. He had his wife, Sarah. And then she said, well, here, take Hagar. Have sex with her and get a boy. What was the result? What?
Problems.
Conflict.
King Solomon.
All right. And so, when you divert from God's plan, of course, Solomon got all these foreign women, led him away from God. So when we divert from God's plan, we may not see today where it's going to hurt us down the road, but God's plan is for our good. And when God made the man, how many women did he make for him?
One.
Is that important to know one woman for one man? I mean, that just happens to be recorded. Are we supposed to take a lesson from that?
Yes.
How do you know? Beyond question. Because of Matthew 19. Jesus referred to that very passage when he was asked if it was okay to divorce your wife. And he said that two should become one flesh. What God has joined together, let no man separate or put asunder. So yes, God's plan was one woman for one man. That's his plan. All right, so we have here family conflict, jealousy, heartache, intrigue. The intrigue. So here we have Leah having these four boys. Now, I don't know that everything that's recorded here beginning in 29:32 through the end of the chapter is recorded chronologically. Is there indications that Moses did not always record things chronologically?
Yes.
Yes, we've learned that, haven't we? We learned that way back in chapter 1 and 2. We learned that in chapters 10 and 11. That's helpful to know about his style of writing. And so here Leah had four boys. And if she had them in succession, one after another, 4 times 10, 40 months, 3 years plus. And so when you get to chapter 30 and verse 1, now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children. So in this 3+ years, did she wait to the end of that time? Or did she see, wait, Liz had a boy. I don't have any. Two boys. In other words, this may have happened simultaneously, what you start reading about in chapter 30, verse 1. And so it doesn't mean Leah had her four children, and then this other woman had two, and then this other woman had two, and then Leah had two more, and then Rachel had Joseph. Because it's recorded that way doesn't mean that it happened consecutively. What we do know is that there's 7 years here that's talked about when all these boys and the daughter was born. And so we saw that when we studied the chapter before us.
where he worked 7 years for Rachel. But instead of it being for Rachel, what did Laban do? He said, oh, that's for Leah. You got to marry her first. You want Rachel? Got to work 7 more. So 14 years for Rachel. Well, she better be worth something, huh? 14 years for Rachel, for the two women. And then 6 more years of service. And that's the period in which he multiplied his wealth. And we see that over in chapter 31 and verse 41. It's a good verse to mark somewhere on your lesson, in your Bible, somewhere. It's a time stamp, 31:41. These 20 years I've been in your house, I served you 14 years for your two daughters. Well, that's what we read back in 29. And 6 years for your flock. And then he says, you changed my wages 10 times. 10 to the Hebrews didn't necessarily mean 10 like 9, 10, 11, but was a complete number. You've completely been unfaithful, unfair, untrustworthy in the way you paid it. And that certainly indicated in the what happened with the two women. We'll see some more of that at the end of the chapter. All right, so...
Steve,
yes.
I found it interesting in the beginning of Genesis 30 that, yes, Rachel becomes jealous of Leah, but she also blamed Jacob. And then Jacob said, am I in the place of God? When Leah was not bearing children, she turned to God. And then when she did, she named her children, you know, God.
Right. It seems to point to the fact, as we have said here earlier, that Leah of the two women was the better woman. There's going to be some more indication of that a little bit later. That's a good point Linda makes. Now, was Leah always as she ought to be?
No.
Did she ever get herself involved in deception?
Yes.
Yes. You know, Jacob thinks he's going to bed with Rachel, and lo and behold, it's Leah. She knew better. You know that. But she was involved in that. So, but of the two women, there's reason to believe that maybe she was the better woman, as we'll see a little bit later in this chapter. Rachel may have been an idolater. But be that as it may. Good point Linda makes. Now, it's interesting. I said family conflict. Look at verse 2, as Linda pointed that out. Jacob's anger burned against Rachel. So, husbands and wives get mad at one another. And sometimes... like in the charge made against Jacob, as Linda pointed out, that's not his fault. She's mad. In Sarah's case, she got mad at Abraham, remember? Over Hagar. But whose idea was it for him to have Hagar?
Yeah.
It was Sarah's. And sometimes we get mad at our mates and our families when we generated the problem. And so Genesis can help us look at ourselves, really. We'll see that with this matter of deception as we go through. All right, so we'd already looked at Jacob being deceived by Laban. Remember the question he asked when he woke up the next morning and found he had the wrong woman? What he asked? Yeah, why'd you do this deceiving me? Of all people to ask about deception? Jacob, the classic deceiver? And so when I'm doing it, it's not so bad. When somebody does it to me, it's not so good. You know, and that tells us something about ourselves if we're not careful. Okay, so we've got a listing of these 12 sons here in 29 and 30, or the 11 of them at least. And the way Moses has listed them, well, they may not be chronological as far as these four were born and then that one. At least they're listed in order of birth, whether they interlapped or not. But now, later in Genesis 35, they're going to be listed according to mother. In fact, just turn over there just a moment. Go to chapter 35. And I'll tell you why I mentioned that.
When I do like the Bible survey lessons, I ask people to learn by heart the 12 sons of Jacob. Well, the way I learned them, and it's easy for me, is the way that they're listed right here in chapters 29 and 30. You know, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, etc. And now I'll ask somebody to say them, and lo and behold, they throw me for a loop because they say them like over here in Genesis 35. In Genesis 35, they're listed according to mother. Look down in verse 22, second part of the verse. Now there were 12 sons of Jacob, the sons of Leah, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun. There's the six boys, but back over here, Issachar and Zebulun is not mentioned until later. So they're listed over here according to mother. Then you get down to verse 24, Rachel, Joseph, and Benjamin. Of course, Benjamin's not even mentioned back here in 29 and 30 because he's born just previous to this on the way back to Canaan when Rachel died. And then the sons of Bilhah, the sons of Zilpah. So, if you parents work with your children on learning the sons of Jacob, there's more than one way that they can memorize them. And if you're working with a class and you ask your class to say the sons of Jacob, if mom and daddy taught them one way and you learned them another way, don't say they're wrong if they don't say the way you remember them. So there's these different listings of these 12 boys. But we have a question on your lesson down at the end. We got list Jacob's 12 sons, and hopefully you've done that. You are, at least you know them by heart. But then, and number three, the birth of one of these 12 boys is not recorded in these chapters. And we've already mentioned that, and that's Benjamin, the last. And he comes to play a very important role in the history a little bit later. And but question four, what role did they have in the fulfillment of God's covenant with Abraham? That's true. And that's a good point. Joseph, his boys actually got his part of the inheritance. But these 12 boys became the head of 12 tribes. Joseph's two sons, actually, Ephraim and Manasseh. And these 12 tribes became known as children of Israel. And what does that have to do with the Abrahamic promise? It's back in Genesis 12. A great nation. And yes, it's through them that the Savior would come. But I'll make of you a great nation. When Jacob left Canaan, Jacob was Abraham's what? Brother? Uncle? Grandson. Grandson. How many children did he have? None. How old was he? 77. Doesn't sound like a very big nation. How many boys did Isaac have? His daddy? Two. That doesn't sound like a very big nation. And Abraham had only one son by promise, by through Sarah. What about this promise? And yet, here you're seeing God in his providence providing for the fulfillment of this promise. All right, so that's why these 12 boys are important. We asked you question number five. Who was Jacob's daughter, Dinah? Now, there's other scriptures indicating he had other daughters. So don't take my question to mean that this was his only daughter. It's the only one mentioned here where we're studying. And that's Dinah. You can see that in chapter 30, verse 21. Now, Dinah is mentioned here. And that's important to something else that develops later when we get to chapter 34. So she's mentioned here, but there's going to be a story that surrounds her. Very important event in chapter 34. All right. Now we'll save question number six because we're going to talk about that as we go through here, as we go through our reading. All right. So, be interesting if we had time to just go through all these boys and all their names. I encourage you to note the names that they're given. And as Linda pointed out, Leah particularly often related to God. But be that as it may, to look at those names. Now, we talked verse 14 following. Here's Reuben, just a boy, goes out and get these mandrakes for his mama, and Rachel wants them. They thought, she either thought that this would stir Jacob's interest in her at this particular time and maybe help with her childbearing. What did they do? I don't know what they did. Fact is, as I did my research, as I told you, there's a lot of question as to exactly what this fruit was. Was it a fruit? Was it a flower? Don't know. But in their culture, it was certainly associated with that concept. So, in verse 16, what a wonderful view of the conjugal relationship. Jacob came in from the field in the evening. Then Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in to me, for I've surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." What a great relationship, huh? Unfortunately, some marriages today are like that. Men and women want to hire their wives for the night with presents and gifts. And that's not God's plan. This ought to be a natural result of the love for one another, the desire to do what God wants you to do. It's a very healthy thing. It's a very wholesome thing when it's ordered according to God's purpose. When it's not, it can be a rather ugly thing. So anyway, it's interesting in verse 20, however, I do want you to note the name of the boy in verse 20. Back in chapter 29 and verse 34, we see that she named her third son Levi. And what was the meaning of that name? Attachment. Were they not married?
They were,
in spite of the confusion the teacher gave in the class last week. They were married. So what do you mean, attachment? Emotional attachment. That's right. She wants that emotional attachment. We call it romantic love. All right, now you get down to verse 20 of chapter 30, and she names this boy Zebulun. What does that mean? Look at the previous part of the verse. Now my husband will dwell with me. Were they living in different houses, different cities? No. Will dwell with me. And so the idea of will dwell with me there in verse 20. And you'll note out in your footnote, some translate will honor. Others translate it different ways. To select her society. In other words, dwell with her in the sense of seek her companionship. He would rather spend time with Leah. Why? With Rachel. Why? He thought she was pretty. But Leah wants that. Maybe he'll spend some time with me. Be a companion. Too many marriages, that's all they are, is a sexual relationship. There's no companionship. There's no sharing time together. They may live in the same house, but they don't dwell together. And so again, you see yes, ma'am.
Just a quick question. I keep going back and forth between Genesis and Luke and Matthew because I'm going through the genealogy with Jesus' parents and how Joseph was from the tribe of Judah, son of Leah, and then looking at Mary's. I'm just trying to see if, while the two relationships were not really approved by God, would it still, I guess that's what I'm having a question on. Is just because it wasn't what God planned?
Good question. Because it wasn't approved does not mean, however, that God didn't use the women. For example, Tamar. What had Tamar get in the picture?
She was raised by her
look over real quick here. Good question, though, Alicia. Look at chapter 38. You'll see this about Judah. We'll deal with it more when we get there. Tamar was what relationship to Judah? Family relationship.
Daughter-in-law.
But what did Judah do with Tamar? Slept with her. she covered herself so she couldn't, he couldn't tell, and this had to do with a promise he had made. She slept with her. But when you get to the end of the chapter, in verse 29, she had a son named Perez. And it's through Perez that David came, and through Christ came. So because you have some bad people in there, it doesn't mean that God approved of everything they did or everything they were. And that's one of the remarkable things about the Bible. It just tells it like it is, whether we like it or not. So that's a good point, Alicia. Okay, so let's go to chapter 30. And verse 25. Now when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my place in my country. Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served you, and let me depart, for yourselves know my service which I have rendered to you." So, if he rendered the service that he promised Laban, how many years has passed?
14.
That's right. So this is at the end of the 14 years. So that tells you Joseph was born to the end of the 14 years. And those calculations I gave you in last lesson will tell you that he was about 91 when Joseph was born. And so when you get to chapter 37 later, when Joseph is sold, he's 108. And so by putting these dates that and figures that Moses has given us, we can get at least some idea. We may not be right on target, but some idea of the, how these things transpired. Well, Laban could see that he had been blessed, verse 27. He said, "Name me your wages and I'll give it." And so he wanted him to stay on because Laban could see that whatever Jacob did had been prospered. And so, verse 30, "You had little before I came and it was increased to a multitude. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turn. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" He said. So Laban says, "What shall I give you?" Jacob said, "You'll not give me anything. I'm not asking you to give me anything." And so he says, "If you'll do this one thing for me, I'll again pasture and keep your flock. Let me pasture your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled and spotted sheep and every black among the, one among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be my," not gift, "wages." There's a difference in a gift and wages. That'll be my wages. I'm not asking you to give me anything. And so, and then later he says, verse 30, "You'll be able to know which are yours," because he said, "Every one that is not speckled or spotted among the goat and black among the lambs, if it's found with me, will be considered stolen." In other words, generally speaking, in that society, and I'm certainly not a sheep herder, I'm basing on what others have said, the lambs were solid color, and white, and the goats were dark colored and they didn't have white spots in them. So what he's saying is that the mottled animals with multi colors, they'll be mine. The solid colors, the natural colors, they'll be yours. And so that was his plan. So Laban said, "Good, let it be according to your word." So what did Jacob propose now? What is he going to do to begin this process?
Sort out.
He's going to go through and pick out these animals and separate them, right? The model ones, that'll be mine. The others will be yours. but what happens? So Laban, that's good. So he, that's Laban, removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats, every one with white in, and all the black was among the sheep, and gave them into the care of his, Laban's, sons. And he, Laban, put a distance of 3 miles journey between himself and Jacob. Instead of letting Jacob separate them, he said, I'll do it. Did he think Jacob was not trustworthy? Was this some kind of an insurance policy? I'll be sure this is done right. Did he think, well, I'll separate them? Since normally, You don't have those kind of animals. I'll ensure that my flock will be the one that will increase, and he'll get the ones that normally don't. We use the phrase, the cards are stacked against you. The cards were stacked against Jacob based on what naturally happened. But that was okay with Jacob. What does that say about Jacob?
Had faith in God.
Had faith in God. God said, I'll bless you. And Jacob had faith in God. With all of his weaknesses, Jacob had faith in God. And so he starts out with nothing. No animals are his. Because Jacob, he takes the model colored animals now, and he said, I'm going to take these off 3 days away. You ain't getting those. And so Jacob now is left with this herd, and he's got to try to breed them in such a way as to provide himself some income for his family. And so that's what you read about in verse 37 through 43. That's a very interesting section. If you've read it before, you know the story. He took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees and peel white strips in them, exposing the white which is in the rods. Set the rods he had peeled in front of the flocks in the gutters, even at the watering troughs, where the flocks came to drink, and they mated when they came to drink, etc. And he multiplied the mottled animals. What in the world does getting rods of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeling them and white stripes and putting them where they come to drink have to do with the color they're going to be when they're born? I asked Matt for class. You know, Matt's a geologist. He's a smart guy. I'm a dumb guy. I asked Matt, I said, tell me something that maybe most of us in this class would not understand how it works. He said, well, is it magnetism?
Earth's magnetic field.
See, I can't even remember what he told me. Earth's magnetic field. Craig, would you explain how that works?
Maybe later.
Maybe later. Oh. That's a smart guy. Now, if you can't explain how it works, does that mean you don't believe it works? No. No. You know it works. And, you know, Matt would think you're a fool if you'd say, man, I don't believe that, but I can't explain how it works. Because I can't explain how Jacob did this doesn't mean it couldn't be done. What's the assurance that it happened like it did? Because Moses was a prophet of God, and he wrote that this is what happened. And so you have this in their history. Now, in my notes, which I'm not going to get into in this class, I found a number of efforts to account for it scientifically. Which one or the other of these may be correct. I don't know. What I do know is Jacob was an experienced shepherd. He's 91 years old. He's got a lot of experience. He knows about sheep. He knows about goats. And so he knew what to do to produce the result that he wanted. Yes, sir?
Well, I was thinking maybe he had God on his side, and it might be that God told him something.
You reckon God might have been on his side?
See?
Yeah, I kind of reckon the same thing. And I tell you what, there's verses to prove that. Look at chapter 31. And when we talk about marking, this is real helpful to me. Look at chapter 31. And this is right on target. After he had multiplied his flocks and herds and became wealthy, starting 31:1, now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and for what belonged to our father, he's made all this wealth. See any more jealousy? There we go again. And so, by the way, is that a fair charge of Jacob?
No.
No. Can you keep people from charging you unjustly?
No.
No. Should you lose sleep over it?
No.
No. And we're going to see some more of that here in this chapter. So anyway, Jacob saw the attitude of Laban. Behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. Note the word friendly in the New American is in italics. And I believe in the New American, is it New King James? Maybe it has favorable in italics. Interestingly, this is just kind of a side note. A lot of people use the English Standard Version. that claims to be a word-for-word translation. And they'll say that in the English Standard Version that Jacob saw that he no longer had favor with. That's what it means, but that's not what Moses wrote. And so they put those words in there to help the reader, but they didn't italicize them like the King James. And well, King James didn't even put them in, or the American Standard. But the New King James, New American Standard. To tell the reader, we added those words. If you use the English Standard Version, I strongly encourage you to check it against the other standard version, like the King James, the New King James, the American Standard, and the New American Standard. Strongly encourage you to do that, because you're going to find words in your Bible that are not there. The translators put them in. This version does too, but they put them in italics. And so that's the idea of italics. In our modern language today, italics is emphasis, and the Bible is just the opposite. All right, so Ennis' point is borne out beginning here in verse 3. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you." Had God promised that before? Where? What event? What? They told that to Abraham. That's exactly right. But when did God make it very clear to Jacob? At a particular event. What?
When he was wrestling with the angel.
Okay, when he wrestled with the angel. And even before that, what did Jacob see?
A ladder
going up to heaven. Angels ascending and descending. And he called that place what?
Bethel.
Bethel, house of God. And he made a promise to God. Remember we talked about that? And promised to God, since you, my God, you're going to bless me, I'll come back here, you'll be my God. And promised to tithe. Now, God didn't enter a bargain. Oh, okay, since you'll tithe, I'll help. No, God doesn't need his tithe. This was a commitment by Jacob to acknowledge him as his God. And so here we see, he said, I'll be with you again. This assurance. And so Jacob calls his two wives, Rachel and Leah. And he said, I see your father's attitude, verse 5, that is not friendly toward me as formerly. But the now watch. The God of my father has been with me. That's exactly what Ennis is pointing out. The God of my father has been with me. All right, go down to verse 7. Your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. What's the most notable example of that? Those two women, right? Worked 7 years for Rachel. Oh, nope, no, that's for Leah. You want Rachel, you got to work 7 more. So changing wages. And so how much other during this period of 6 years, I do not know. But in any case, and as Don pointed out, back here in the idea of separating the animals, said, I'll go through and separate them. Laban said, I'll do it. And he took them off. And so, but look at verse 7. God did not allow him to hurt me. God did not allow it. So what did God do? Did he come down there and slap Laban across the face or something? Providence. The providential care of God. And so you get down to verse 9. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. That's providence. He sees God's hand in what has happened. Verse 11. We noted this on your marking. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob. And I said, here I am. He said, lift up your eyes and see all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel. Angel of the Lord, verse 11. Any angel? No, Jehovah God. And he said, I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. And so he talked to his wives about this, said it before them. And the women said, surely all the, verse 16, all the wealth which, look at their conclusion, God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. And so they leave. Okay, so they leave, verse 19. So they head to Canaan, verse 18. Verse 19, Laban had gone to shear his flock, and Rachel stole the household idols that were her father's. Was she an idolater? I don't know. We don't know even exactly what these idols were. The Hebrew word, they don't know exactly what it referred to. There's guesses. But some kind of association evidently with idolatry. And Rachel stole her father's idols. Archaeological information indicates that there were some that thought the idols would guarantee them the family inheritance or family rule. That may be. And if that's it, that's why it was coveted by Rachel and became such a big issue to Laban. I don't know if that's the case. Yes?
I don't know, but it seems as though maybe they were making some kind of precious metal like silver or gold or something.
It could have been. I really don't know what they were made out of. I have no idea. So anyway, so they crossed the Euphrates River, set his face to the hill country of Gilead, which is, of course, in Canaan. And so Laban catches up with him, but he had a dream, verse 24. And God said, be careful you do not speak to Jacob, either good or bad. Later on, in verse 42, on the same lines of what Enos suggested, Jacob says to Laban, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands, so he rendered judgment last night. He told you in that dream, let me alone. You better listen. And he attributes it to his success, the hand of God in what he was doing. I'm not saying it was miraculous, but there's the providential hand of God in what was happening. So anyway, verse 26. Laban said to Jacob, what have you done by deceiving me and taking away my daughters like captives of the sword? Is that what he did? Is that what he did? No. You may do something that's honorable, and people accuse you of wrong motives. What are you going to do about it? Maybe nothing. I'll tell you what to do about it, though. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
It's funny that he's saying that to Jacob, because he can deceive Jacob into...
Yeah, he's saying that to Jacob, right.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Well, just what I'm saying is it just seems funny that he's saying that to Jacob.
Yeah. That's a good point, Susan. When he's so deceptive himself, isn't it? Yeah, that's a good point. Yes, Ronnie?
Well, I have to wonder if all that stuff with Esau wasn't known to Laban and his family. Because you get the impression when you're reading this that they think all the way through it that Jacob is a deceiver. But maybe Jacob is paying for that.
It could be. Jacob was a deceiver. Had been. But... Laban's right up there with him. They might vie for who's the best one.
When you're smarter than other people and raise a bigger flock than Laban's boys can, they see you as being too clever by it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they accuse you. Same thing with rich people today. Say, I know you got rich. No, you don't. That means they're dishonest. Same thing in verse 30. You stole my God. Did he steal Laban's gods? No. No, he didn't. I think that clock is 5 minutes fast, Neil.
He also didn't leave because he wronged his father's house.
Sir?
He also didn't leave because he wronged his father's house. He left because of what he talked to God about.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, God had encouraged him to go back. And, of course, Canaan was the land of promise. And so I'm out of time. I thought maybe I'd get through the end of the chapter, but... Eventually, Laban and Jacob made a covenant not to harm one another. That's the end of the chapter. So, anyway, the Lord willing, in our next class, we'll pick up in chapter 32 and 33. You'd think in 40 minutes you could cover two chapters, huh?
But appreciate you good. What?
To love how much is in them.
Yeah. Good comments. I appreciate your good comments tonight. Lord willing, that's where we'll pick up in our next class on Sunday morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you.